does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it
all. You're listening to the best of Kevin and Querry on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
My name is Jake Querry, Kevin Bowen here as well. Mark Dykton, man in the controls. It's Kevin and Querry, the now top 15th ranked middle market FM station between 100 and 108 on a dial in the country.
Top 15 sounds better than just saying 15th, right? Kristen Airy texted us yesterday, congrats on being top 15. I mean, we could be 11th for all we know, right? I kind of like Chris's. Well, that was a good PR spin on it.
I look at it this way, though. If you look at the shows that were in front of us, you got Birmingham, Cleveland, Charlotte, Buffalo, Kansas City, Oklahoma City. I mean, what are they talking about?
Well, that was a big night for them.
Thunder, don't leave us.
They got a big win last night.
You know, that Cowboy Hall of Fame, I personally think Roy Rogers is his year. I mean, is that what they're talking about? Nashville, Pittsburgh, Baton Rouge.
They probably are not going over the rankings.
It's a family program.
Analyzing every city.
Baltimore, Milwaukee, Kansas City, and St. Louis. So Kansas City twice. They cancel out. That moves us to 14th right there, right?
Did you say you had a Frank Reich-related comment?
Frank Reich on the third-ranked mid-market radio program in the morning in Charlotte. They're probably discussing Frank Reich. And this question was posed to me, and it's a good one. If you had to put your 401k right now on either of the of two slots, which one would you go with? Who makes the playoffs first, the Indianapolis Colts or Frank Reich?
Yeah, I'd probably go Panthers. I mean, hell, they almost made it last year. Certainly the same thing can't be said about the Colts. And the NFC South is just one of the most godforsaken quarterback divisions you'll ever see.
It's unbelievable. I mean, honestly, does any team in the NFC South have a starter next year?
Mark, will you look up if Darnold's under contract? I'm pretty sure he's not. So, Jake, if you were to look at the under-contract quarterbacks, Marcus Mariota not under contract, Jameis Winston not under contract, the best under-contract quarterback in the NFC South is...
Desmond Ridder?
Yeah, Sam Darnold's a free agent.
P.J. Walker?
Yeah, I mean...
Now, Derek Carr did visit or is visiting New Orleans.
I think that's where he's going to end up, right? Isn't that kind of the thought process?
Yeah, a mutual thing there with the Raiders.
They invited him for a visit, and the Raiders have granted permission for that to happen. The plan is for him to visit today.
Got it. So there could be a stop for Derek Carr. But I would go with Frank Reich on that one. I do think this, Jake. Are we a little premature in crowning Jacksonville as going to be the best team in the AFC South for the next half dozen years?
I mean, anything can happen.
They're trending in a really nice direction, but a little too early to just crown them as like, boom, they are here to stay for X amount of years.
But based on their... You know, their record wasn't like, where did they finish in terms of the AFC in record? In other words, what will their schedule be next year?
Well, they won the division, so they'll play all the first place teams in the AFC
next year. I was thinking it goes by where you rank.
I mean, if they lose week 17, they don't make the playoffs.
Right.
It's not like they won going away.
I mean, they have, but Kevin, they have the answer and solidarity at the most important position in sports.
Without a doubt, and he certainly took a huge step forward. I don't know if I look at them and say, pencil them in for 12 wins for the next five, six years.
But I think you do. Here's the thing.
They have a tough opponent. I'm looking at their opponents real quick. Woof.
Understood, but here is the thing. They have fewer questions about themselves than the other teams in the AFC South, right?
Definitely.
In the NFC with Carolina.
There's no Jacksonville equivalent in the NFC South.
And... this is the other thing. Like, where is the wild card opening in the AFC?
Yeah.
I mean, if Kansas City wins their division, you still have the Chargers in that division vying for a wild card. If Cincinnati wins their division, you still have Baltimore and Pittsburgh vying for a wild card.
Miami just made the playoffs.
Yeah, if Buffalo wins their division, you got Miami vying for a wild card. In the NFC... I mean, the NFC East maybe, but I, you know, it just there's seems to be a lot more talent or middle pack balance in the AFC. Yeah.
It's a conversation we had last year. I've never seen the AFC this deep. And you could argue it's only really grown after last year because, you know, I remember a conversation we had this time last year was arguably the two worst teams in the AFC last season, 2021, you would say were Jacksonville and the Jets. Well, they both were playing with quarterbacks drafted one or two overall.
Yeah.
So the conversation was, what would happen if either of those two quarterbacks took a step forward, a la what we saw with Peyton Manning from 3-13 to 13-3? Well, Zach Wilson didn't sniff it, but Trevor Lawrence sure as hell did. So that, I think, is the reminder of...
Is Zach Wilson out of... Does he get a second shot somewhere? Or is this it?
Oh, I think he'll... Yeah, I think he'll still get another shot. I mean, hell, if Carson Wentz got as many shots as he did, and... You know, even Tannehill got a second shot. Yeah, I know that Wilson's play probably definitely wasn't at the Wentz level early in Philly, but I think he'll get some sort of chance.
I was saying in the break, if and when Rodgers gets traded from the NFC, give me your top five NFC quarterbacks next year. It's wild.
Boy.
Especially with Brady retiring.
You got to start with Jalen Hurts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Prescott?
Yeah, I put Dak up there.
Stafford?
If he returned, he was banged up last year.
Stafford slash Kyler Murray?
Oof. And that's top three? That's like top three. You're debating top three already.
I mean, again, more to fill. Jared Goff after what he did last year?
Daniel Jones?
Did you see what he might be getting in a deal? $35 to $37
million? I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet.
Kirk Cousins?
Daniel Jones. I think I'd go Goff before I'd go Cousins or Jones.
Okay. The fourth string guy for the Niners?
Seriously.
I mean, hell, the Niners' third string quarterback might be better than five different NFC team starters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to say, but that's the reality.
That's why I think the debate...
A healthy Garoppolo?
Yeah, the debate with, is Frank Reich's Panthers going to make the playoffs first or the Colts? It's got to be the Panthers.
Yeah, yeah.
Without question.
I would agree. Saw yesterday Brian Flores to the Vikings as their defensive coordinator. This takes away a finalist in Arizona. So right now it's Indy and Arizona, the two head coach openings. Arizona has Mike Kafka on their finalist list. The Giants offensive coordinator, Patrick Mahomes, is former QB coach. And then Lou Anarumo, the Bengals defensive coordinator. Okay. So neither of those finalists in Arizona have been finalist here. Kafka did interview here, but did not interview a second time. So... Again, if we look at the four other openings this cycle, outside of D'Amico Ryans, and there's obviously reasons why he took that Houston job, I don't really think the Colts were that seriously interested in any of the candidates.
Yeah, not a lot of cross-pollination, you mean, among candidates?
Yeah, and maybe Sean Payton was a little bit more of the Colts doing on
better
that
job, front. Colts or Cardinals?
What's the better job?
Uh-huh.
I'd say the Colts, because at least you get your pick of quarterback, whereas with the Cardinals, you're stuck with Kyler. And you have to actually like him, which apparently has been the hard thing to convince coaches.
Very good point.
Don't they have the third overall pick?
I believe that's...
So if they wanted to, again, financially, it would really hamstring them, but if they wanted to make some huge sacrifice, they could try and get rid of Kyler.
I think that Arizona... Doesn't Arizona just kind of seem like one of those franchises, though, that you're like, is that really an NFL franchise? Like, do they have a serious fan base? You know what I mean?
Fan base just kind of, is certainly a fair question.
But
then they show up and they make these like weird runs every like 8 years.
Boy, it'd be a nice place to live.
On the Shane Steichen front, and I know, Jake, does Jim Irsay's tweet yesterday indicate anything to you on days, not hours? Would you slot anyone else in the favorite group if you had to bet on anybody?
No. I mean, when he says days, I think the thing about
like days, if I were to give you hours, $10 right now, who would you put that $10 on? You had to put all $10 on one.
I mean, I've said Raheem Morris all along, but then I had the vision, man. Aaron Glenn. It's one of those two.
Yeah, I'm glad you've gone vision, not dream.
I don't think I was necessarily in full REM sleep.
I think I'd probably put the $10 on psych, and again, I'm not overwhelming with that thought. But, you know, his quarterback history, I think you have to really like that. Again, Philip Rivers, and by all accounts, Philip Rivers and Shane Steichen are extremely close still to this day. And knowing Philip Rivers, that dude's not hanging around with unintelligent human beings about the game of football. So you're going to get an extremely bright-minded coach. And then you look at what he had after Rivers, Justin Herbert and Jalen Hurts, two obviously young quarterbacks, two different style quarterbacks. That, to me, has got to be pretty attractive as well. If you want to maintain the defensive system currently in place, Shane Steichen and Gus Bradley worked together with the Chargers for 4 years. He was a college quarterback, Jake, at UNLV, so you know that, again, he's handled playing this position. I think there are definitely some reasons to like a lot of what Shane Steichen brings. I think anytime you've got like the super intellectual, bright coach, there is that worry of like, can you connect with everybody? You know, it's not just, you know, crazy math inside of the quarterback room. You do have to be the head coach. But I think given the Colts situation, there's a lot of reason to like
what's there. Do we get caught up in association, though? In other words, do we know that Shane Steichen's a really good coach, or are we thinking of him in association of he's kind of like Sirianni, who we should have kept? So that's who we can't get Sirianni.
I don't even know if he's like
that. We can't get Peyton
Manning,
so we got Jeff Saturday. We can't get Sirianni, so we're going to get Shane Steichen. We et cetera, et cetera, right?
Yeah, I don't get the vibe that he is Sirianni personality. But to your point, Jake, I think we do that with every candidate. I mean, you look at everything.
Correct. Glass, oftentimes, guys are not hired based on who they are, but rather who they remind you of.
It's glass half full or glass half empty. And a lot of it is just a 180 of what you previously had. I mean, if you look at Carolina's candidates, they went super young or super offensive with a lot of their candidates. That was the stark contrast. Obviously, Denver, the hire they made. Houston was very young compared to what they went with Lovie Smith and David Cauley each of the two previous years. But yeah, again, I don't feel uber confident with it, but if you were to say $10 on one person right now, I'd probably go Steichen.
Do you know where Shane Steichen went to college?
Yeah.
You do? Did you already say it?
Uh-huh.
Did you say it already?
I thought I did. Maybe I didn't. Stephen Holder was just there, right?
Correct. UNLV. Do you know the most famous quarterback to come out of UNLV? Or the most famous running back to come out of UNLV?
Definitely not Shane Steichen. I think Scott Turner is an NFL coach that also played quarterback.
A very popular Eagle. Mark, you got a guess?
Randall Cunningham.
That is correct.
Nice.
Do you know
job,
the running?
Mark,
do you know the running back, Mark?
Is it Icky Woods?
Look at the big
what in
brain
the world,
Mark.
My UNLV knowledge is untouched.
Gosh.
Who had 38 in the 1987 Final Four against Indiana and a 97-93 loss?
LeBron James. I don't know.
That'd be Armand Gilliam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think UNLV, I'm not acting like Shane Steichen was some, you know, all Mountain West quarterback there for 20 years, but certainly he's played that position. He's calling plays in the Super Bowl, and we'll see how the rest of the week plays out.
Do you think, again, I want to reemphasize this point, though, Kevin, when I think a lot of people thought when Irsay came out and said this will be days, immediately people thought that it's got to be somebody who is currently in the Super Bowl. But while it is not forbidden, it is strongly suggested that teams not make an announcement Super Bowl week anyway, correct?
Correct.
Which is kind of a dumb thing, but whatever.
And again, the agreed-to-terms announcement you saw Carolina do, you saw Denver do, but then they waited several days before Frank Reich and Sean Payton put pen to paper and then had their official press conferences. I don't think the Colts are going to go down that path. I think Chris Ballard has so much embarrassment and nightmarish thoughts about Josh McDaniels.
You're big on that, right?
Yeah. I think they will wait to make sure this is final. Everything is good to go before they make an announcement. I mean, Jake, picture yourself in that organization. And for 8 hours, Josh McDaniels tweets were going out. Josh McDaniels on the face of your website, you're sending out, you know, ticket forms with Josh McDaniels on it. And then he tells you no. You'd probably have some embarrassment still. You'd probably have some scar tissue about it. So I totally get why they're being so hesitant and not having the typical NFL announcement where you get the agreed to terms and then the press conference comes a few days later. I could be wrong on that, but that's my thought.
I'll never forget getting that alert.
I want to say it was 11 a.m. in the morning. 11 a.m. in the morning, the announcement. He agreed to terms.
Right.
And then
it's like 7 o'clock that night.
I was going to say just after dinner.
I was at a park. My buddy Torian was playing in a Parks Rec League basketball game, and I was in the stands. And all of a sudden, I looked down. I'm like, man, my phone is just blowing up. I'm like, wait a minute, what? Thanks, but no thanks. Okay.
Wild, absolutely wild. Yeah, the YouTube chat's commenting. Yeah, I forgot that Kenny Mayne, ESPN Kenny Mayne, was a quarterback at UNLV.
Colin Coward went to UNLV, didn't he?
That always dumbfounds me. Kenny Mayne, college quarterback?
I always thought Kenny Mayne's shtick got really old really fast. Am I the only one that thought that? I think he's a talented guy, don't get me wrong, but like...
I thought I had some good staying power.
He was a good anchor on SportsCenter, but when they started sending him out to do like features and he thought he was funny, it was like... Ugh. Probably Kenny Mayne's not greatest moment was when he was the 1 year that they had him as the MC for the Indy 500 Victory Banquet.
Oh, I remember telling the story.
Laurent Raydon, he says, coming in 17th place, Laurent Raydon, who wasn't there to come up and get the check, and he goes, apparently Laurent had better things to do tonight and decided not to come here. And somebody walks up and like, oh, sorry, Laurent's in the hospital in traction after an accident on lap 200. Yeah, dude. It's 2002. The accident with Buddy Lazier that led to the controversial Paul Tracy, Castro Nevis finish.
I want to go back a little bit to last night, Jake, and Indiana's win over Rutgers. Obviously, the first time since 2019, and their inability last year to handle, honestly, you could point to it earlier this year. I know North Carolina's fallen off a cliff, but Jake, think about the hype after beating North Carolina. And all of that, the pomp and all the, oh my gosh, Indiana, what a huge win. They beat the defending national runner-up, all this stuff. And they go to Rutgers then a few days later and really get handled. Last year, you beat Purdue on your home floor, the court storming, et cetera, et cetera. Then you lose by 18 to a Michigan team that was bad last year. That was a 500 Michigan team that came into your building. Last night, here you are, playing at home, reacting after a big win, your first game after that emotional win, and you're playing a much better opponent than I think certainly Michigan was last year, and you kind of beat them a little bit at their game. You know, it wasn't like the prettiest looking win by any means. You didn't score 79 like you did against Purdue. There were some ugly moments in the second half. You go through a scoring drought. At this point with Indiana, you're looking for steps. Preseason, everybody thought legit Sweet 16, sort of contender. They've won 7 of 8. They just won a game that they lost last year kind of in a similar fashion. Now the next question will be, can you do it away from home? You did it against Illinois last month. You know, that will kind of be the next question on the list. But I thought last night was an important step for them in continuing to try and show those preseason expectations were not unwarranted.
I thought, Kevin, define what you mean when you say like at their own game.
I thought it got pretty mucky and pretty loose ball, offensive reboundy in the second half, and that's where Rutgers excels.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you know, to be fair, that's part of why Rutgers got back in the game. But if you look at how Indiana iced that game last night, Jake, it was a Trace Jackson Davis offensive rebound that he put back in, and then Trey Galloway did the same thing with a three-point play late. Like,
the one thing
that's Indiana winning a little bit in a different way.
The one thing that, and by the way, it was Freddie Banks had 38, Armon Gilliam 32. in 87. Sorry, Mark.
Mark was all over that.
The Alfred had 33. I know that much. The thing about the game to me last night, Kevin, was I really did feel like in the second half that Indiana did, you know, every time Rutgers got within five, like when it got down to five, you were kind of worried, right? Like it's a 10-point game. It gets down to five, and you're like, wait a minute.
Got to 3-2, I think, separate points.
But it just felt like they never let them fully get over the hump. And to your point, kind of a grind down, not necessarily a pretty game. I guess that's your point there, right?
I mean, they had an eight-minute scoring drought.
Yeah.
How many times last year did we say eight-minute scoring drought that couldn't overcome?
The game totally got away from them, right? But I just felt like it was like they kind of controlled the game, Indiana. Like it didn't. Did you ever think to yourself, like, oh gosh, here it comes?
No, I know the McConnell kid missed a three that was pretty open to tie the game. You know, that might have been one of the few times. But for the most part, you felt like Indiana was still going to be able to. Again, they have such, I mean, I know Zach Edey's more the cheat code, but hell, Trace Jackson Davis at times. Sims, I mean, he spun around Cliff Amore. I mean, he dominated him with that spin move. Cliff Amore threw a three that I think landed in Griffey Lake there late in the game. He shot it, and then Usain Bolt sprinted right away.
Griffey
to try and
Lake. Did you have that on
used
the
used to watch that
card?
Show in the 90s.
A lot of things been lit up over at Griffey Lake. All right, 8 o'clock hour here. Kevin and Query, Stephen Holder joining us now. He got the retweet yesterday from Jim Irsay. I actually thought Irsay then took his tweet and was like, you know what, I'm going to put my Irsay spin on it, but pretty much say what Stephen said a little bit earlier in the day, and that was a reminder of the patient process Chris Ballard promised back a month ago. It's a month today since the cold season has ended, by the way. And Irsay said the final decision would be strictly based on what's best for our franchise's success, best for our fans of Colts Nation. Final decision coming in days, not hours. Steven joins us now. Steven, I might be premature with this, and we'll see what the final answer is, but I get the vibe that Jim Irsay has let Chris Ballard run this how Chris Ballard has wanted to run it over the past month. And I have not said that about every or many important decisions this franchise has made over the last 12 months.
I concur 100%. That is the vibe that I get. That is every indication that I have. That is what I have taken away from all of this. And I think there's a couple of indications. First of all, you look at who they talked to in terms of who they interviewed. Now, they went after some of the bigger names. Obviously, they talked to Dan Quinn and guys like that, but there haven't been maybe the sexy names, if you will, right? And I think that, to me, that indicates Chris Ballard's in charge. I think they also, with the deliberate nature of this tells me Chris Ballard. That's exactly what he told us to expect, right? And you're right. Jim Irsay didn't need to put up his own tweet because I did say the same thing he said. So I don't know if that's a kiss of death getting the retweet from the owner or not. But anyhow, I agree with you. I really do. And I have also heard from people in the building who don't like the fact, or let me put it this way, don't love how Jim Irsay has been characterized throughout this. I don't think we were wrong about anything we said, okay? But I also think they make a fair point when they say, you know, this has not been Jim Irsay's nature throughout his time as an owner, and it hasn't. So hopefully this was the exception and not the rule, you know, some of the interaction we saw last year from him. And we'll see. I get the sense that you are correct, though, KB.
Steven, is it even possible with the lack of information, and I'll give the Colts credit in that regard, to tell us like even a gut of who you think the front runner is? Or is that literally an impossible estimation at this point?
I really think it's impossible. And I think it is remarkable. You know, based on or what you just said, it is remarkable in terms of them controlling the flow of information. It's unbelievable. And I think part of that is number one, I don't think they have given a lot of indication And they also have talked to such a large number of people that it is hard to kind of weed people out. They've all gotten the exact same treatment, which was intentional, not because they were trying to keep it a secret, but because they were trying to ensure that everybody got a fair shake. You know, that's what was emphasized to me this week. You know, the whole, what was it, like 12-hour interviews. I understand that each candidate, each of the finalists who had in-person interviews, they each got 3 to 4 hours on average of one-on-one time with Irsay, which sounds like a lot. He could make a lot of music references in 3 hours. I really think all of those factors have made it really, really impossible to, you know, without someone specifying to you, you know, who the front runner is, made it hard to determine that. And they're not talking. I'm telling you, they are not talking, at least not in terms of specifics. And as you said, I give them credit for that.
Stephen Holder with us from ESPN.com. I hesitate to call anyone a favorite at this point, and this is me probably reading too much into it, Stephen. But if we get to like Friday and it's still really, really quiet, would that mean to you that someone in the Super Bowl, maybe Shane Steichen, is that favorite? Because if it was somebody else, could you see a little bit of leakage from their side of things? Whereas the Steichen camp is going to want to be all in on the Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. Obviously, the Ballard camp wants to be all in on quiet, quiet, quiet. Again, I'm probably reading too much into this, but if we get to Friday and we've heard nothing, would that lend you to think that sort of lean one way?
I mean, it's a fair, what's the word? It's fair to wonder that, for sure, put it that way. I mean, if you were taking bets, you'd probably take that bet. Not because I heard anything, and I know you're not saying that either.
Right. I don't have an overwhelming amount of confidence with that, but if I were to go anywhere, that's probably where I would lean.
Right. I mean, I think if we're looking for indications, right? And we don't have any. Okay? So that's like the one possible potential indicator that we have. So you can't ignore it, you know, given the limited information that we have. I think that's a fair statement. But again, I mean, do I know anything about how they feel about Shane Steichen? No. And the one thing I would say about all of this, keep in mind, is, you know, we have gotten so little information, but we have heard so much speculation throughout this thing, right? So much. And I have really just kept quiet for the most part. Like, if I know something, I put it out there. If I have some, you know, reasonable thoughts, I put them out there. But I've really tried not to speculate because, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff said, and most of it's been wrong. That's something somebody in the building told me this week, was that, look, you have no idea how wrong some of this information has been. And I'm not talking about anything specific, but I'm just saying a lot of that has probably come from social media speculation. But all I can tell you is that they've apparently been sitting back and laughing at a lot of it.
Stephen, the report came out. I believe you actually were one of those that had information on this, that the reason that the Colts were, I'll say blocking, for lack of a better phrase, not granting permission for other teams to talk to Gus Bradley, was because there were perhaps multiple head coaching candidates who had expressed an interest of retaining Gus Bradley as their defensive coordinator. Do we know which candidates that would be?
I do not know. That is true. Yes, that is what I was told. And my understanding is that it is definitely multiple candidates. I do not know which ones.
Can we go off some of the connections? Isn't Raheem Morris, Bisaccia?
That's what I was going to say. Like, we could kind of look for connections.
Yeah. Shane Steichen.
And there are a few, right? There are a few. I think there's some, like, legitimate, like, I just talked about speculation, but, like, there's actually some, you know, some strong indicators we can look at there, even though they're just that. There's still speculation, but I do think there's some decent speculation we can make there. Like you said, Bisaccia has history with him in Vegas and elsewhere, I believe. Raheem Morris, and he have history. I'm forgetting someone. Steichen.
Yeah, Morris, Bisaccia, Steichen are the three that I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there could be more. I mean, I think you don't have to necessarily have history with him to also watch the tape and say, you know what, this defense is workable, right? I mean, the Colts' offense last season was absolutely dreadful, okay? I mean, dreadful. And I think if you watch it and keep that understanding in mind, I think you would have a pretty positive impression of the defense and say to yourself, okay, well, who am I going to go get at this point? You know, that's better. And I don't know, maybe you have someone in mind, because generally coaching candidates do. But if you have something in place that also works and the team is actually in favor of that option, because I think Chris Ballard does seem to, I mean, he built that defense, and I think was in favor of obviously hiring Gus Bradley. So they would be in favor of it. So, you know, you might just kind of go along with that.
Steven, the QAnon folks went crazy yesterday direct messaging me that when Jim Irsay said that the decision would come in days and capitalized days, that meant Jeff Saturday. Your thoughts?
Oh, my God. Man, I don't know if to be impressed or if to be scared.
I think I'm kind of impressed by that.
Right?
That someone's like, mind would go there. You imagine if Irsay was doing that?
I mean, first of all, wow. Okay. I'm not that smart, I guess. But my thoughts are, let's hope that's not true, because then I'm going to have to start looking at life in a whole different way. Okay. That's scary.
Steven, I got one more on the coaching front, and I do want to ask you something else non-coaching related before we let you go. But we're now a month into this. I've said all along, I'm totally fine with the amount of patience that Chris Ballard has shown. The one negative, the one con I would have is, are you missing out on some staff candidates? You know, let's not act like just the head coaching hire is the most important thing, particularly if that person is not on the offensive side of the ball. You've got some big-time hires and some big-time people maybe to try and retain as well. What cons, if any, do you think there are with the Colts waiting as long as they have?
That's the one I have. I agree with you. And, I mean, look, I'm not up in arms about it. I don't necessarily think that they have made a mistake. But I do think they have made a willful decision here to take their time. And when you do that, that means that you understand there may be unintended consequences, and that would be one. There's no question about it. I think that the staff matters a lot, like a whole lot. Now, the good thing is there have only been, I think there were, five openings this year, so there's not quite as much movement as there was, like, last year. I think there were 10, ultimately, 10 different head coaches. But there's still, this is still the time of year when people want to get settled. If you're an assistant coach, you got your family, kids in school, et cetera, you want to get settled and understand where you're going to be, and this is the time of year that happens. And people start getting nervous, you know, when the musical chairs are toward the end of the process, right? You don't want to get left standing, right? So that's a legitimate thing. And the other thing I'd say about coaching staff is, I think a little discussed issue over the last year or so is, I think Frank Reich suffered a lot from his staff departures over the past two off seasons, like a lot. I mean, we know we talked about Sirianni a lot, and that one is obvious, but there have been other departures too. Among position coaches that I really think ultimately did not help Frank Reich. And some of those, he let them go, and you know, to allow them to have upward mobility. I credit him for that. But ultimately, his staff, I think, took a hit as a result of some of those moves.
Steven Holder, by the way, is our guest. He is with ESPN.com. Of course, he joins us on the Payless Cigars hotline. Is there any chance that the Colts look at this year's quarterback draft and say, you know what, a couple of intriguing talents, but there are no can't-miss franchise guys. We are going to go ahead and run this one more time with a veteran. Any chance that happens?
I think it's a fair question. I think a lot of people just dismiss it right out of hand. You know, like the whole Derek Carr situation, and I'm not proposing that at all. But I mean, I don't think it's like a ridiculous thought either, right? I mean, that's a different level of quarterback than they've looked at the last few years, I think. I see him completely different than, you know, even Philip Rivers, who I loved, but, you know, was 39. Anyway, however, I do think there's a couple factors. Number one, they have the number 4 overall pick. You don't get that opportunity often, all right? I mean, it took a very unique season for them to get there, and I use unique very loosely. So you don't know where you don't know that you're going to end up in that range of the draft, like ever. That's number one. Number two, very clearly, the owner is tired of the back and forth at quarterback. And I do think, given that reality and the reality of where they're drafting in terms of draft slot, I think the opportunity is too great. I think you have to do it now. So I don't think it's likely. I'm not ruling it out, but I think it's a very, very, very small chance of it happening just because it's just too compelling. The opportunity and the uniqueness of it is too compelling for them to not do it right now.
Couldn't agree more.
So to piggyback off that, I'm not saying for the Colts, but I am curious of this. And I know he's a wonderful talent. But I saw yesterday that Aaron Rodgers now says he's going to take another, he's doing some weird, you know, trip somewhere where he sits in the dark for 4 days and to the point of hallucination, right, to clear his head. That's cool.
He's going to take mushrooms, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like.
I mean, he's done it before. Has he talked about this before?
So, well, my question is anyway, this. Sorry. Like, he's under contract, right? I mean, I your point, yes. I mean, I totally agree with you, right? Like, who knows what this guy, you know what I mean? He's a Berkeley dude, right? But he's under contract. Is he going to eccentricity his way out of teams having interest in getting his services towards the end, number one? And number two, he's under contract. Like, why does he have this decision?
I think that's a great point. He does. He has carried himself like like he has all the cards here. There's no question about it. I think he has. I think it's actually an indication of how much he has worn the Packers down, though. He's worn them down so much that he apparently is working under the assumption that that they're sick of me and they're not gonna put up with this anymore. I mean, cause it does feel that way, right? I mean, he has not, it seems, entertained. I haven't heard anything from him entertaining the option of like coming back to the Packers if he plays. I mean, has he even said anything remotely close to that? I don't recall it.
Well, I just think it's odd, the whole like, you know, I'll decide if I'm going to play next year, and if so, like, where I'm going to play. Like, what do you mean, where you're going to play? Like, you know, Steven, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to take this weekend. I'm going to think about whether or not I want to do a radio show next week. And then if so, I'll let you know where it's going to be. What? I have a contract.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what he's doing. That's exactly what he's doing. I don't know. It's a very strange thing. Look, I would say this. The Packers have to be exhausted, you know. I'm exhausted. It doesn't have anything to do with me. Like, every year, man. Every year. I mean, these guys, the front office, the head coach, had to fly out to California and kiss the ring for him to deem them with his presence. And it's like, that's exhausting, man. Come on. You know, I would be over it. I think the Packers fans, there's a fair amount of Packers fans who seem to be over it, too. And frankly, they, you know, I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers is washed. I am not saying that. But, I mean, he wasn't good enough to make the difference in that team, you know, the way he has in the past this year. He really has been a guy who he's carried that team a number of years. There have been a number of years where he has carried that team. He was not able to do that this year, which I think is also telling.
Can you imagine playing for the same franchise as Brett Favre and somehow surpassing him as the most dramatic off-field quarterback in franchise history?
What the hell is Brett Favre doing here?
I mean,
well, that's the thing. Last year, he started looking like Jets Brett Favre, or, you know, maybe at times like late Vikings, and I think that's pretty concerning, too. Steven, last one for me, and I guess kind of on this front, and again, I couldn't agree more. When you have the opportunity with the 4th overall pick, you've done this song and dance the last handful of years. You have to take advantage of that. Having said that, you know, the Colts could, and I would understand it. I think it's debatable whether you start the rookie from day one, whether you don't start the rookie from day one.
Right.
You threw out an interesting veteran name that I think if Matt Ryan wasn't the name or wasn't the QB here this past season, he very well could have been the starter in one of your latest pieces on ESPN.com as just a potential landing spot for some of these free agent quarterbacks. And I thought your explanation made some sense. You mind sharing what you said about Jameis Winston? Yep.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the reality is they were deep in talks with Jameis Winston before Matt Ryan became available. And it's my understanding that Jameis was Frank Reich's choice if they had to pick from among that group of you know, sort of second-tier quarterbacks, you know, that were available.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about, like, Mariota, Jameis, et cetera, that group. Jameis was, I think, the guy Frank Reich preferred. I don't know what Chris Ballard's preference was. But anyhow, that's the first thing. The second thing is, number two, I should say, the money, I think, would be reasonable. That's for sure. And then, lastly, honestly, I think that the ability of Jameis, or his strength, really is to throw the ball down the field. And what was missing most from this offense in 2022? They had no ability to stretch the field, like none. And I don't know how accurate Jameis Winston is, but at least the threat is there, and that helps Jonathan Taylor. I mean, think about what you might have been able to do with Jonathan Taylor this year. You know, had he had... you know, some ability to get to back guys off the line of scrimmage. He didn't have that. I mean, defenses were crowding the line of scrimmage, and they didn't have the ability to back them off because they had no threat of throwing down the field. So it's not ideal, and I'm not promising you that it works, but I do think you could see a scenario where if you play good defense and you know, you have at least, you know, some explosiveness in your offense and run the ball well, you know, you could see a scenario where that could be workable. And I think that's kind of where they're going to be. They have to have some sort of veteran here to take the pressure off the rookie. I think sticking him in there and just assuming he's going to play day one, I think it's never a good idea. If it happens, it happens. But don't just proceed as though that's going to be the case, in my opinion.
And again, the assumption Matt Ryan, Nick Foles won't be wearing Colts jerseys
coming
September here, 2023. All right, Steven, does the nightly drink intake alter at all right now, considering that we're kind of waiting for this white smoke, or are you under the impression that, yeah, I'm good till Monday?
First of all, I just got home from Las Vegas, so I probably don't need to drink. But yeah, I think we're good for a few days. I didn't get the sense the last time I talked to people that there was anything imminent. And then that was before Ursae's tweet, or retweet and tweet. So I think they're definitely signaling to us that, like, hey, sit tight. I mean, there is the whole notion that the NFL they kind of frown upon major announcements on Super Bowl week. We're now at Wednesday of Super Bowl week. Roger Goodell has a big press conference today. That's going to be the big headline of the day. I mean, by the time we get to the end of Super Bowl week, unless it leaks out, they're not announcing anything. I can tell you that, like, almost for sure.
Right.
So I don't anticipate anything. No.
Hey, did you go see Carrot Top in Vegas? I didn't know.
He looks awful. You were right, Jake.
Oh, it's unbelievable. He and Madonna, like, there's some guys sailing the world on a yacht, a plastic surgeon. Like, hell yeah.
I heard Steven had some success on the tables.
So, okay, yeah, I did not go see Carrot Top because I was too busy winning lots of money at blackjack and then giving it all back in the subsequent days, because that's how it works. Yeah.
Well, I would like to know this, Steven.
Shelbyville or Anderson, if you really want to keep going.
I would like to know which is a more exhilarating high in a nightclub. Winning blackjack in Las Vegas or being accompanied by yours truly to see Too Short at the Vogue?
Oh, I mean, that's pretty close, isn't it? Wouldn't you say?
Let's not feed the ego any more than it needs to be fed here, Steven.
It was a pretty good show, I will say.
It was cool.
Maybe that oxygen from Vegas is getting to Steven a bit in the old casinos.
I'm jet lagged.
Well, how long were you in Vegas, Steven?
He was a Pro Bowler, right?
I was in Vegas for like 6 days, which is
yeah, that's double
too many days.
Yeah, that's way double the max. Yep.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I was working. Don't get me wrong. I wrote a lot of stories. Like, I actually worked, right? But there's 24 hours in a day, man. And I was like, get me out of here. I got to go home.
Yeah. 6 days in Vegas, so, yeah. You should get a free trip to somewhere to relax for that penance that you served out there. Steven, thank you for the time. We'll probably see you here soon.
All right, guys.
Tonight, it will be the final game before the 3 o'clock trade deadline. I do appreciate a 3 o'clock trade deadline. You don't have to wait till like midnight.
Yeah, it's better than the midnight, correct.
So 3 o'clock Thursday, if I remember correctly, the Oladipo to Houston, James Harden, Caris LeVert, all of that, that happened really close to the deadline a couple of years back. We'll see if the Pacers get involved with anything here in the next day or so. To chat more about that, from the Indianapolis Star, he is Dustin Dupirak. Dustin, I want to start here. I think any time you kind of evaluate a team at the deadline, particularly one that is, you could probably make cases for both sides of buyer, seller, probably fall somewhere in the middle. You kind of look at where do they have a lot and where do they not have as much. So if I threw that to you, where do the Pacers you feel like have a surplus and where do you feel like they need help?
They got a surplus at the backup five. And on some level, they need to at least try to move somebody, I think, out of that situation. I mean, on some level, all three of their backup centers, Daniel Tice, Isaiah Jackson, and Jalen Smith, give them something a little bit different. Jackson and Davis are kind of, Jackson and Smith are kind of similar body types. But Smith, I think, has a little bit better touch around the rim. He's a little bit of a better outside shooter, even though he hasn't done a great job at that. And he's probably a little bit of a better rebounder. But Jackson's a better floor runner and better rim protector. So there's some slight differences there, but I think they ultimately want to keep those guys and just sort of find out what each of them have. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them move Daniel Tice, and I think that might be a reason why he's getting so many minutes right now anyway. But if they kept him, I mean, they could live with it because there is something he gives them that they don't. I mean, just as a wider body, big muscular guy, sets bone rattling screens, boxes people out. I mean, he's still figuring out his, what he's doing with this team. But obviously, you've seen him be valuable for playoff teams in the past. Was with the Celtics through the finals last year. So he's a piece that they could move just to sort of pick up something. And the area, obviously, they're missing. That they need is power forward. Obviously in the starting lineup, they Aaron Neesmith missed the three. Obviously, was playing the four. I mean, he does play more physical than anybody else. Really, they've put in that spot, and I think plays above his 6'5" size, but he's still 6'5", and it's causing them some issues on the glass. I mean, I guess the guy really does get after him on the board. So I don't like to talk about him like he's a bad rebounder or anything like that. But it's just there's just only so much you can do in the NBA when you're 6'5" when it comes to just grabbing stuff off the glass. And the fact that he only averages right around 4 rebounds a game is an issue. And it's part of the reason why I think they're about 25th, 26th in defensive rebounding. I think it was 25th when I wrote a story on Sunday, and it might have gone up or it might have gone down. But the bottom line is they're not finishing enough possessions. There are times they're doing a good job of defending the first shot and not doing a great job of keeping them off the glass and keeping teams away from second chance points. So they need rebounding, and they could really use it from the power forward spot. The question is where they go after it now as they're sort of heading towards 10th, 11th in lottery position. What's the ultimate upside for this group, and what are you willing to trade to get to that? But on that basis, what do you need? You need a power forward. What can you afford to lose? What could you really need? What would help you to get rid of? It's sort of clearing out that logjam at the backup five.
I guess the question I would have, Dustin, would be this, and that is, of the players the Pacers are willing to move, give me the three that actually have the highest value on the market.
Buddy Hield, Chris Duarte, and I guess Tice. I'm trying to think of who else, because obviously they're not moving Halliburton, they're not moving Mathurin, they're not moving Turner now that he had that that extension. Obviously his deal technically allows you to, but by going out and having a press conference saying, look how great this is that we signed Miles Turner, and then obviously answering Greg Doyle's question by saying we don't sign a guy to trade a guy, Turner's off the market, and you can't have that big press conference and move him. Those guys are off the market, and I can't imagine they would move Andrew Nembhard. I think they want to see what they've not see what they've got with him, but I think they're really proud of themselves for getting him and like what he brings to the table. So I'd be really surprised if they moved a guy like him. I'd be surprised if they moved Aaron Nesmith. I think they really like what they're getting from him as well, especially with that deal. So I think those guys are pretty much off just on the basis of their youth and whatnot. So, I mean, I think he'll still get you something. I think he still gets you a good bit. Obviously, the guy's leading the league in three-pointers. He's 30, so he's not crazy old. And, you know what you're getting from Buddy. You know, you can't make him the centerpiece of your entire offense. But, he can still get you buckets. And, obviously it's a question on a place where he fits. If you put him in an unstable situation, I don't know if that's going to be very good for him. But if you find a team that really likes him and appreciates him and a chemistry of guys he gets along with, he could be really valuable for you. But they also like him where he is. I mean, I'm sure that they're willing to listen to offers and willing to, entertain, basically a package where they could get something really good for him and some other guys. But they're not rushing to get rid of him. They are happy with what he's produced. They like what the chemistry he brings with Tyrese, and all of that's important. So if they're going to move him, it would take a lot. But I mean, I think Duarte still gets you something, even though he's had his struggles coming off the ankle injury. Obviously averaged 13 a game last year. I think he's still still young at 25, still a valuable player. So I think you get to get something for him. I think Tice is kind of the next one. I think those three, especially as veterans, CJ McConnell is another one. I think if you need specifically that, if you need a second team point guard, obviously they could move him and move Andrew Nembhard into that position, and put, him more on the ball, offensively. But McConnell has been just super productive for them, especially during the period where Haliburton was out, as much as they lost those games. I mean, McConnell really performed, really well, and you could see that he could still do what he does, very well, be able to get to the rim, hit short jumpers, and facilitate and, defend people, get steals from the backcourt, just do TJ McConnell things. There is still some value for that. So if somebody really wanted that, that's a guy I think that would have at least some level of value.
You're going to laugh when I say this, both you guys. You ready to call me crazy here?
I can't wait. I've been waiting for this all morning.
Not that there are people knocking down the door for him. Don't get me wrong. I think the Pacers consider TJ McConnell in the category of Mathurin, Haliburton, etc. And I don't mean in terms of talent, future, whatever else, but in terms of untouchable. Am I crazy, Dustin? Like, I really believe that Kevin Pritchard really values what TJ McConnell brings to them.
That is high praise.
Yeah, I don't think you're crazy. The untouchable part... Because, Mathurin and Haliburton are our level of untouchable. Like, those are...
I get it. I mean, I get it.
Someone offers you a lottery pick tomorrow.
I'm just saying,
you're going to do it.
I think he is more in the we'd rather not pile than he is in the make us an offer pile.
He's definitely in the we'd rather not pile. That I would agree with you with. And I mean, again, he's performed really, really well. I mean, I think you've seen just how much he still has left in the tank in the last couple weeks. Again, it wasn't enough to get him a win, and so I think that's the reason why you wouldn't call him untouchable. He only got him one win, obviously, in that entire stretch that Haliburton was out. But, man, he really did so many things well. Basically, when he's haven't really operated a full second unit since Haliburton was out, even if he's come back, it hasn't been, all five guys from the bench on the floor at the same time, but did a really good job with that second unit, before Tyrese got hurt. So that there's just been so many things he's done well this year. And again, you just see that he's got so much left. Man, when he wants to get down, it's remarkable just how, if he really wants to get to his shot, he gets it, and like you look at him and you just think of him as limited on some level. But when he wants to get to the rim or get to the paint, he's so effective at it. I mean, he's good at beating his man to his spots. And that's valuable, and obviously is really good at setting guys up, and again gets you how many loose balls a night, whether it's a steal in the backcourt or a long rebound or something like that. I mean, like, that's really important. Keeps those. It does a good job of just keeping morale up. It would have to be part of a much bigger offer. You have to get somebody very real for him. Again, they see a lot of value in him. I think he's a guy that obviously they think that can be a part. Just be a part of the core. I mean, Rick Carlisle absolutely loves him. Yeah, just and he's one of several of those guys that Carlisle discusses about. And so, yeah, he is not a guy that they are looking to get rid of, that's for sure.
Yeah, love and appreciation and untouchable. I think those are got to be two different things. Again, Dustin DePerak with us here, Indianapolis Star. Dustin, you know, we're at the Miles Turner press conference. You've chatted with Kevin Pritchard, you know, recently about the trade deadline. Do you get the vibe that the goalposts have moved a bit from wins and losses don't matter at the start of the year to now, oh, we are starting to win. That's going to impact what we do at the trade deadline.
100%. Yeah, no, I mean, I think he said that one line he used was, I'm just so bullish on our guys. And he did say, I am looking at this team a lot different than I was in October. You know, that's not the exact wording or whatever. But
do you think that's more individual pieces or wins related?
Both. I mean, he also did say, like, this isn't going to be our best team. You know, I think that's something. That's another thing he said was that, you know, we're not looking at this as this team has to win right now, and you know, we're not looking at this as you know, we've got to go all out. We've got to throw something for this team because it has to have its best chance to maximize its position. It's more of a sense of, I have more of what I'm going to need than I expected to, and we're further along in the rebuilding process than we expected to be, but we're not necessarily in the place where it makes sense to go all out for this year, because what are you going all out for? You know, what's your ceiling? And right now it looks like your ceiling is to get into a playoff series. Just to get to one. And it's like, okay, like, if you're not going to be able to win a round, if, you know, winning the play-in and ending up in the eight and playing the Celtics is your best-case scenario, what's that worth? And are you willing to trade anything that is going to matter for your future and for that prospect when you could start thinking about next year and the year after and the year after and you know, what are the pieces that you want to be there for that? That's, I think, where he is the sense of, like, you know, if you can get this team into a play-in game, there's value. I mean, I don't want to act like there's not value, but there's only so much in it. And it's a scenario where, like, you're certainly not trading for somebody that has an expiring deal, and you know, it's not like in baseball where it's like, man, this team just really needs a lefty reliever. You got to be willing to trade a, you know, rookie or, you know, one of your top five prospects to go get one because this is how far you can get. You know, they're not there. It's, you know, like, I mean, I could see. I don't think they're going to go after John Collins for other reasons, but you know, like somebody that has some time left on his contract, and you could say, okay, well, that's going to be a piece for you going forward. Like, if you go get that person, it fills the, you know, hole that you're missing, and that's going to be a core piece for you as you get closer to being a championship team. You know, that's the thing that obviously they would be willing to do, but they wouldn't go, you know, you're not getting a rental is the point. You know, this team doesn't need rentals. It's not going to go far enough for it to make sense for them to trade anything of value for a guy that they're going to lose.
My prediction, if they make a move, it is actually the surplus of number ones that they use to sweeten the pot.
Yeah.
To move somebody and then upgrade that position. That's mm-hmm. my prediction.
Yeah.
Because I think that they feel like, Dustin, they've got good positioning. You know, because those two number ones they have from Boston and Cleveland are going to be late, and then they got Houston's second round pick, if that makes sense.
Got like four in the top 32.
Correct.
Right now.
So like they've got three picks between 25 and 35. I'll bet they unload one or two of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Kevin Pritchard went so far as to say is that he said we almost certainly won't bring in four rookies because they're young enough as is, and it's just the phrase he used, and it's a little gruesome, but you know, to get to his point, it makes sense. He says when you have so many young guys, they kind of cannibalize each other, and he's right. I mean, I think you just see what's happening with between Smith and Jackson right now. You know, having two 22, 21 year old guys at the same spot where you already have a starter. You know, again, you're trying to figure out what to do with 18 minutes a game, and even before Tice came back, I mean, they were basically alternating that. You know, so like one of those guys who they, you know, really believe in and think have bright futures is getting a DNP on, you know, basically every other night. So they have a log jam there already, and it's like, okay, well, what else? Who else are you bringing in that's going to be in a similar position? You know, you could, you know, you're starting to get a bunch of young wings. You know, when you've got Duarte, you've got, you know, Mathurin, and obviously they do need more. Their needs, again, I think they need more power forward. I think they could use another, high scoring, high usage wing. I think they just need another top player, basically, to be a part of this thing. I just think there's just a little bit more talent to be part of this core. But you do run the risk of, okay, well, when's that guy coming off the floor? When how are you getting this guy minutes if you have to play this guy? They're not too far in the future for that, especially with the young guys, and they could easily find some players stuck on the bench. And they've already had talented players. Gobadadze was a first round pick, and they're going to have to move him because he's not getting any minutes at all. If you bring in another surplus on top of what they already have, with all the guys they already have on the team, they have 5-6 guys that are 23 or younger, might even be more than that. Then you are really running the risk of having guys not be able to get minutes when they need time to develop. I mean, you might be sending way too many guys down to Fort Wayne. So they are, I think, certainly willing to move those picks, particularly the Cleveland and the Boston pick. I think obviously they look at those as first rounders. They think they'll be valuable. Again, the issue is going to be that Cleveland and Boston are going to be bottom 10 draft picks by the time it's all said and done in the first round. So they're only going to be so valuable, but I think they absolutely are going to look to move them. Pritchard said, I can't imagine we're bringing in 4 rookies, so I just don't think they will. And one of those is going to move at some point, whether it's now or before the draft.
Tonight, it's a 7:30 tip from Miami Pacers. Last I saw, 6.5-point underdog. Kyle Lowry, Victor Oladipo, who Dustin knows well from the IU beat back in his days. And then, of course, the trade deadline tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Dustin, good luck with the news cycle here over the next 24, 36 hours. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me, guys.